Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross of VSiN by the Books will join us to go over Thursday Night Football, a huge game between the Seahawks and the Rams, get his thoughts on the rest of the NFL games, the college football playoff, the Mets, whatever else is on Dave Ross's mind. And I will start with Thursday Night Football. Talked a little bit about it on Sunday, and I like the Seahawks. It's hard to love the Seahawks. You always have to worry about Darnold, who has had trouble with the Rams. He's had trouble in big games. He was awful against the Rams last year in the playoffs when he was with Minnesota. He lost his first game with Minnesota. I think it was maybe the second in 4 days when they lost to Detroit, and then they lost to the Rams in the regular season last year, right around the time Halloween, a little before the World Series started, you know, late October. So he's lost now three times to the Rams, and basically, you know, 13 months here, 0-3, a bunch of turnovers, a bunch of sacks. So that has to be in the back of your mind. That being said, I just go back to the first game where it's an interesting box score because if you look at it, the Seahawks did have over 400 yards of offense and had a lot more yardage than the Rams in general. But if you look at yards per play, it was pretty even. Seahawks 5.2 yards per play, Rams 5 yards per play. And the Seahawks just ran more plays. The Seahawks had 79 plays. The Rams had 50. And it was just strange in terms of that. It was a game where the Rams, once they had a lead, they were just trying to, you know, play keep away, be conservative, and almost bit them because they punted the ball back, and they were lucky the ball went out on like the 1 foot line. Otherwise, the Seahawks probably win the game with a game-winning field goal and almost won it anyway. And that's what I keep going back to. Seahawks turned it over four times through four interceptions and still had a field goal at the end where right before the final play, they were like minus 130 favorites to win the game, minus 135 favorites. I remember looking at the line because it was a long kick. It was a 60-yarder, but indoors in fine weather conditions, 60's not that much anymore. And Myers just couldn't kick it straight. He missed it. And the Rams won. So I would think when you flip home fields, no Adams, and I wouldn't imagine Adams play. I mean, that's speculation. Shouldn't say no Adams. But with a hamstring, are they really going to play him here on 3 days rest with bigger fish to fry? I know this is a huge game for the one seed. I'll get to the odds for the one seed in a second. I wouldn't imagine they would rush Adams back again. That is speculation. That is not confirmed. You know, Nacua got banged up, but he did go back in the game. Doesn't sound like that is much of an issue. I'll go with Seattle here. I do think from a betting standpoint, though, the better way to attack it instead of betting Seattle, and it keeps going back and forth. Seattle favored by 1.5, Seattle under 1.5 point underdog. Both teams have been favored by 1.5. Seems like every time you look, somebody's a different favorite depending on when and what book you look at. Teasing the dog up is probably just the way to play it, whether you tease it with the Bears on Saturday night or you tease the Eagles down against the Commanders. That line is 6.5. You tease the Lions down with the Steelers. That line is 7. That's probably the way to play it, is to tease the dog up. Whoever the dog is, and it's a little more, it's a little dicier, even though the home team, it is a little dicier with Darnold, just because if he has one of those games where he throws up on the field, he could certainly not stay within the number. I mean, I would expect it to be a close game, but if he has one of these turnover fests where he's just throwing the ball to the other team constantly, that's how you get outside of a 7.5, and that's how you get outside of a number, even with a teaser. So I'm okay teasing whoever the dog is. I do think Seattle wins the game, but with Darnold's struggles against the Rams and struggles in big games, I could certainly understand the hesitance, you know, to have too much confidence in backing Darnold. Odds for the one seed, this game will go a long way to determining that. Rams minus 155, Seahawks plus 205, and the 49ers plus 750. Everyone else 17-1 or longer. Bears are 17-1, Packers are 100-1, Eagles are 300-1. I can't remember a scenario. Last year was pretty unique where it was just the Vikings and the Lions, and it was whoever's going to win the division is going to be the one seed as well. I can't remember where it's all three teams in the mix for the division and for the one seed. That is very unusual to have all three, the three shortest betting, I want to say favorites because they're not all three favorites, but the three shortest short shots all in the same division. Very odd. Rams with the chalk there, minus 155, and then Seattle 2-1. Rams a little over plus 750. 49ers a little over 7-1, plus 750. I would say it's interesting. If you like the 49ers at plus 750, should you just bet Shanahan coach of the year? Because if they got the one seed, he'd probably win coach of the year, but Shanahan's only 6-1 coach of the year. So then you have to flip it the other way. Is it possible that Shanahan could be the coach of the year without being the one seed? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't know that there's a great bet there. I do think Shanahan's been slept on a little bit for Coach of the Year, but I'm not sure that's like a great bet. So I like the Seahawks. I like whoever is a dog, is a teaser. I think this should be a close game, should be a competitive game. Just quickly to go back on Monday night, it looks like the Steelers-Ravens Week 18 will probably be for the division. The Steelers have at Detroit and at Cleveland. At Cleveland could be a tricky game, division game. They play good defense at home. And Detroit is a game I wouldn't expect them to win. Ravens, tough schedule, too. They play the Patriots. They're home against the Patriots, at the Packers, and at the Steelers. More than likely, because it seems like that Week 18 game is also going to carry the tiebreaker. It would carry the tiebreaker for sure if the Steelers beat the Ravens, because they already beat them once. So you could possibly have a scenario here. I think if both the Ravens Steelers win this week, the following week, Week 17, both their games are meaningless, and it's 100% comes down to Week 18 for the division, which would probably be just like a toss-up game. It was like a 6.5-point line in Baltimore a couple weeks ago. You flip home fields, you maybe upgrade Pittsburgh a little bit, downgrade Baltimore a little bit, maybe get to like Baltimore, small favorite, minus a point or two. But that could be the scenario. And I would imagine if that's the game, that's probably the favorite to be that Week 18 finale on Sunday night, where you have basically a play-in game or the first playoff game where it's a division title game. That's looking very likely as of now that that game decides the division in a couple of weeks. Tua and this cold weather, not to go back too much, but wow, you can't. And the game got over the total. He actually got over his passing total late, which both were bad beats, but he just looked so bad. I don't know if it's because he's from Hawaii, played down south in college. He doesn't have the arm strength. And maybe when it's that cold, he just can't get loose and his arm doesn't get loose. And it's almost, you know, it's like a pitcher who, anyone who's ever pitched or thrown, you feel better. Your arm feels looser in warm weather and cold. It's just you can't generate that flexibility, that velocity. And his ball just dies. And it wasn't even that windy. His ball just dies in the cold weather. And he was awful on Monday night. Some late touchdown drives to make the score and his stats look a little bit better. But that game was 28-3, and it was over then. Aikman was crushing, and rightfully so, was crushing the Dolphins and really crushing McDaniel without using his name for how much time Miami was using huddling, using the play clock. He said, "What are you doing? I don't know that I've ever heard an announcer be that harsh on a coach," and I can't say it wasn't justified. I mean, it was pretty much justified. I do think it was a little bit of like, all right, the game was over. It's not like they were going to rally, but that doesn't justify basically just giving up and we're going to huddle, we're going to take our time. That was very strange. At least give an effort. And they got the ball in the end zone twice, but at least give the effort of, all right, we're going to go no huddle, we're going to try to run these plays quickly. That was very bizarre, and good for Aikman for not letting him off the hook. He destroyed him in terms of the clock management. So anytime you see the Dolphins in these frigid temperatures, not a bad idea to play against them. It's hard to really account for it in the line when you have a team, especially a quarterback, who just can't function, just can't operate in the colder weather. So that's the NFL. I'll have one more here before I get to some college football thoughts, but the bowl games underway here. And that would be the Titans getting 3.5 against the Chiefs. I can't see the Chiefs, and they have not covered at all. They've been a favorite, it seems like, the last 5-6 weeks. The Bronco game where they were a favorite, they lost. The Colt game, they were a favorite. They won, but they didn't cover. All of these games since, the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, the Texans last week, every week it's the same thing. They're a favorite and they lose. How are the Chiefs, after all of these years making the playoffs, making the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, now that they're eliminated, now that their quarterback is on the shelf for a while, at least the end of this year, maybe he's ready for the start of next year, but the quarterback's out, the game means nothing, they're going to go at Tennessee for a meaningless game, and they're going to rally the troops, and they're going to put forth a big effort. I don't see it. I like the Titans plus the 3.5. I wouldn't be surprised if the Titans won. I wouldn't be surprised if the Titans won comfortably. To me, this is the flattest of flat spots. I could see the Chiefs coming out completely, completely flat, completely lackluster. And it's not always just your effort on the field. It's you put in the time and effort in the film room, in the prep, and all that stuff. I just can't see the Chiefs bringing their fastball on Sunday after a lost season. I think the Titans win the game. And remember, too, the Chiefs have beaten up on all these teams in the AFC, all these teams in the NFL for a decade now. It's these teams it's their opportunity to kind of kick the Chiefs while they're down. I don't care that you yell at Mahomes. We're going to get fired up to beat you. It's going to mean something to beat the Titans. Plus, they got a young quarterback. I really like the Titans. Plus the 3.5 on Sunday. The Bulls, game Tuesday night, game Wednesday night. And then one more on Thursday. Usually, I feel like usually these bowl games start during the day action starts earlier, but I think Friday is when the day action really kicks off, when you got an 11 a.m. game Eastern, and then you got a 2:30 game Memphis NC State leading into the bowl game or the college football playoff on Friday night, Bama laying 1.5 to Oklahoma. I love these bowls just because they're on during the day. They're kind of usually standalone games. You can watch them, you can bet them. They've always been fun. But these are some rough matchups. Kennesaw versus Western Michigan and Missouri versus Arkansas State. And boy, you go down the line. And part of it's the college football has taken some of these better teams. The playoff has taken some of these better teams. So you just get the lesser bowls. You just don't get the lesser bowls with better teams. But these are some rough matchups. That being said, it's football. It's on TV. You can watch it. You can bet it. But as far as just being a casual fan, there is not much interest there. Plus, anyone who's good doesn't play. It used to be, I remember watching these games when I was younger. And it was, at least you watch and you could have an idea who the NFL prospects were on these teams. And that made the game fun to watch. Like, oh, that guy's going to be in the draft. This guy's going to be in the draft. And you keep an eye on them. And just because you know they're going to the NFL, you don't get that anymore. Because these guys, if they're good enough to go to the NFL, they either go to the NFL before the bowl game or they're in the transfer portal. You really, unless you're betting these games or unless you're really a diehard college football fan, the bowl season has been diminished. It's not as fun as it used to be, but it is still fun to have these games on during the day and have all this action where, it's basically the next month or so with the bowl games, with the college football playoff, with the NFL being on Thursdays and Saturdays, you pretty much have a football game on every day the next, 2-3 weeks, which is a good thing. So we'll see what Dave Ross has to say about the Thursday night game. We'll get his thoughts. The NFL card, the college football playoff. Excited to talk to Dave as always. We'll give him a hard time about the Mets. Rate, review, subscribe. That is coming up next. Let's talk to Dave. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him weekdays. VSiN by the books, 7-10 Eastern. We're going to go easy on him because his Cowboys just got eliminated. His Mets have not exactly done much. But it is Dave Ross. He is our buddy. Dave, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, you're just, I have a little scab wound and we just pick it right off to begin the show. Hey, look, that's what we do. And you're right. It's been a rough couple weeks. Like, I fooled myself, I'll admit this, that after the Cowboys went 3-0 in that stretch, after they made the trade for Quinnen Williams, you go get the linebacker out of Cincinnati, you get Wilson in there to help out, and you get Overshawn back, and you start to feel like maybe this defense has come around. And I have win total over 7.5 for the Cowboys, and I'm stuck at 6 with these back-to-back losses, and I fooled myself. That performance against your Vikings on Sunday night was embarrassing. From a defensive standpoint, it was embarrassing. So I look at that now, and I go, who are these guys, man? Like, I don't know. I don't know who they are, because you really do have to start looking about next year. And I know they're going to play this week. They're not mathematically eliminated. The Eagles would have to lose all three. The Cowboys would have to win all three. That's not going to happen. You and I know that. But from a betting perspective, they're still going to be ramping up as, hey, we're playing until they tell us not to play anymore. And I do think there's some leans you can start to look at, Will, for coaches, whether it's a first-year coach in Brian Schottenheimer or coaches still in the hot seat, like maybe a Zach Taylor, maybe a Mike McDaniel down there in Miami. Their seasons, they have been mathematically eliminated, but I think they still might have something to play for, because if you can't get the players to perform for you now and you're in a front office or an owner and the guys quit on you, that means you're going to get fired.
We'll get to some NFL games, some college. Got to ask you about the Mets, but we'll start. It's a great Thursday night game, maybe the game of the year. Rams, Seahawks, Darnold's coincidentally in kind of the same spot he's in last year, where he might get the division or the one seed, and if he doesn't, he drops all the way down to a wild card. He has not played well against the Rams, the 4 interceptions, the disaster in the playoffs last year, lost him in the regular season as well last year in L.A. About a pick'em, I would say whoever's a 1.5 dog, watch this line back and forth because it's a pretty good teaser piece because it figures to be a close game. I would pick Seattle if anyone. What are your thoughts on this game?
I did bet Seattle at a pick 'em price here at even money, and it has flipped now. They're a point and a half favorite at some shops here. But I love that angle. Even with Seattle in pocket at pick, at even no juice, I would look to, if you can get the Rams up to a tease at 7.5, I got a nice little window there for a possible middle if Seattle can win by 7 or less. Look, you're right about Sam Darnold against Sean McVay and what's happened here in the playoffs last year. Even the first game this year, Seattle was better than LA that day. And, you know, you get the Myers 60-yard field goal that doesn't go in at the gun that would have won it for Seattle. But that was because Sam Darnold turned it over too many times in that third quarter, in the decisive third quarter. So I was saying this earlier in the week too, Will, and I think it's fair to criticize Darnold for what he has not done when the stakes are the highest. I think you go back to the Detroit game last year. I was on Minnesota 11-1 to win the division. I cashed all those over tickets, adjusted win totals last year, 7.5, 8.5. I did 8.5, 9.5 with Seattle this year with Sam Darnold. Those have all cashed. But the bugaboo remains, what do you do when a division's on the line? What do you do in a wild card game? What do you do if you win the division? Until he answers that, and I've heard other GMs say this, it's a real thing. It's not a media narrative of, oh, you guys are just saying that because Sam. No, it's a real thing until you do it. So at some point, Will, is it this week against the Rams? Yeah. But here's the thing. Even if they win this game, San Francisco could be coming right around the back door, and they already beat Seattle once. They'd have to play them again in Santa Clara. So even if Darnold got this one against the Rams, they're not out of the woods yet. They'd have to beat the Rams and San Francisco to theoretically wrap up this division.
Let me throw this one at you. I was talking about this in the open. The Chiefs laying 3.5 to the Titans. They have been in the playoffs. They've been in the Super Bowl. They've been winning Super Bowls. They're eliminated. Their quarterback is hurt. Are they really going to get off the mat and say, all right, let's rally the troops and go win a game at Tennessee that means nothing? Meanwhile, Tennessee, all of these teams have gotten beaten up by the Chiefs for a decade. These teams are probably looking to punch back. They got a young quarterback building for something. I think the Titans actually win the game. I wouldn't be surprised if they won it by a little bit of margin. I love the Titans in the spot. Would you agree or no?
Oh, absolutely love that handicap. The only way I'd play it is Titans money line or even an adjusted number like Titans minus 2.5 and get it really, really juicy. We just talked about it with certain coaches that are still playing for something. With Andy Reid, we saw this last year. Remember the last game of the regular season when they had everything wrapped up and they played Denver, I think it was, and they just went out and laid down because there was absolutely nothing nor no one playing in that game. I could see the same thing happening here. What do they care? What is Travis Kelce care about going out there and blocking hard against a linebacker in a run play? I mean, it's just not going to happen, right? So to me, if I'm Andy Reid, what I really would do is take the opportunity to talk to the Chris Joneses and to the Kelces. Do you want to play? Because if you don't, I do have guys that do want to play. By the way, the better chance if you're trying to cover a number and you're back in the Chiefs, you better hope for that scenario. Because if they trot out the old guys, there is just no way – human nature, that a Chris Jones is going to go out there to try to dominate a double team and get through it. Travis Kelce on a chip block and then release. That effort is not going to be there. Not even knocking those guys, Will. I think it's human nature. Take the points for Tennessee. Play the money line. Play an adjusted number. I love them to win the game outright.
Plus, it's the fatigue factor of all these years being in the playoffs, playing an extra month all year in playoff game after playoff game. We saw what the 49ers catch up to them last year, and it's catching up to the Chiefs. Plus, it's not even what you said on the field. It's the prep leading up to the game. Are you really going to be studying the extra film, putting in the extra time at practice, or is it, you know what time can we get out of here? Let's just kind of get ready for the offseason. I think this could be a rough last month for the Chiefs. That being said, they haven't covered it all in any of these games the last 5-6 weeks. I remember when they lost to Denver and they were a 4-point favorite in that game. People said, well, the schedule's easy. They can win out. The only game they've won, they've basically lost out since. The only game they won was that Colt game when they were down 11 in the second, in the fourth quarter. So this has been Chiefs have been a fade. I think they'll continue to be a fade. Anything else you're looking for in NFL before we move to college?
You know, I love my Cowboys. I got 7.5. I'm undefeated in my VSiN career, 2-0. Of backing Cowboy over win totals in the Mike McCarthy era. I did not play them last year. I said stay away. I did play them pretty hard at 7.5 this year. I don't know why they're favored over the Chargers. I don't get that number here. Like, the Chargers figure out a way with a one-arm quarterback and Justin Herbert. We know how good they're playing defensively. And I also kind of worry about the Cowboys' mojo because they could be mathematically eliminated before they take the field if the Eagles beat the Commanders on Saturday, which all likelihood that would happen. What motivation are they going to have? Now, Brian Schottenheimer will be motivated because he's a first-year coach. Dak probably because they're going to go through the game plan. So they might be up for this one. But past that, the last two in D.C. and in New York or in the Meadowlands against the Giants, I don't know why the Cowboys will be favored in those games. I don't know that they should be.
The Super Bowl is what two teams?
Okay, you ready for this? It's going to get a little crazy here. I do like the Buffalo Bills still to potentially come out. If their defense can play a little bit better, they'd have to go the wild card route, and that's not going to be easy. Any stretch of the imagination, that won't be. I'm starting to believe this will be the year for Sam Darnold and looking at the Seahawks and thinking if they can win the West, okay? I don't even know if they can get the one seed because if they run the table, they will. But even if they have one slip up, but if they can beat San Francisco and beat the Rams and somehow get that one seed, Chicago might have something to say about that. It's going to be tough to win in the Pacific Northwest if they're at home. It's all the difference in the world to me is this, if Seattle wins the division or if they have to go on the road as a wild card. I don't see them going that route. So I do like them. If you have nothing in pocket, you can still get them about 2-1 to win the division, plus 215s out there. I'd play that. And if they get there, well, I think they have a really good shot to win the conference.
Who do you think wins the AFC North? It's going to come down to that Week 18 game is what it seems like.
It does, but don't you think, there's no way I can back the Steelers this week. I know they're getting 7. You can take them on the number against the Lions. Lions aren't losing that game. We know the Lions' history of rebounding when they lose. So this is the win-loss. I think they've done it 8 straight weeks. So it gets you back to the win column for Detroit at home. And then Baltimore, New England's coming in there. That's going to be really tough. So I think they might – there's a shot both teams lose. I think if you pressed me, I would take the Ravens at plus $1.05 right now to win the division just because it's the plus money side. And I do think if they play again in Week 18, as good as Rodgers looked against the Dolphins, that's probably the best he's looked all year and that offense has looked with 4 straight touchdown drives. I still think the Ravens will show more resistance defensively. I'm going to back the Ravens, but I don't love the play at plus $1.05.
College football playoff, your favorite bet of the 4 games is what?
Roll Tide. Now, I'm worried about Simpson because I don't know of his health, and that does worry me, and I think we're on oppo ends here for Boomer Sooner. But I know Jensen Lewis is. And Jensen and I, this is one of the few games we actually disagree on here in the first round on Friday night. I think, Will, if you told me at any point of the year that you were going to give me Bama 30-1 to win the national championship, with multiple games to play, let alone just 4 in a college football playoff, I take that bet every day and twice on Saturdays. I'm going to roll with pedigree here. They're going to have to get the running game going a little bit if Simpson is not 100%. The part that fooled me, I thought maybe halfway through the year he was the best quarterback in college football. Clearly he was not, and he has regressed. I don't know why that is. If that's Kalen DeBoer and the worries about Michigan, Penn State job when that was open and the like. All that's gone now because he's staying. He's not going anywhere. I got to think this is the best version of focused Bama with time off to lick their wounds against Georgia. People have already forgotten they did go to Georgia and win in the regular season. They did put up over 400 yards against Oklahoma the first time around, figured out ways to lose. I think if you get more of those offensive performances at Georgia and against Boomer Sooner the first time, I think they roll tied into that round of 8, if you will. And I tell you, man, if you're Indiana, maybe I'm crazy. I think they want to play Oklahoma. They don't want to play Bama sitting there with their Heisman Trophy winner and the pedigree of the upstart program versus the tried and true one. I think it might be a bad matchup for Indiana, and I know everybody loves them right now.
Have you seen the look-ahead lines to what the games would be, the matchups would be?
Yeah, 6.5 is what I saw Bama would be catching against Indiana. Are you kidding me? You're going to give me a touchdown with Alabama against Indiana? I'm going to take it every time. I mean, that's going to be an auto bet for me. Again, Indiana goes out and blows their doors off. I'll tip the cap to them. I saw 9.5 for Boomer Sooner. If they win, I'd play that as well. If whoever wins that game, I'll be looking to back them against Indiana the following week.
Imagine just being in a coma for a couple of years and you come out of it and you say Indiana. First off, Indiana's in the college football playoff. What the hell happened? They're a touchdown favorite over Alabama.
And
what is going on? It is very strange. It's hard to get used to. Anything else? Do you think any of these Cinderella teams, which, I mean, look, you're going to put one of them in, fine. Have two of them is ridiculous. These aren't even good Cinderellas. I get the year Andy Dalton with TCU. Some of those boys, there's a time and a place where the Cinderella deserves a shot. These two teams are not it. I think they both get absolutely destroyed. I don't want to lay it with Ole Miss. I do like laying it with Oregon. Do you have a thought or two on the two Cinderella teams?
See it exactly the same way. I'm going to lay it with the Ducks, lay the 21.5. Obviously, you'd like to get the 21. Shop around there. If you made me play one of the dogs, it would be to the Tulane side catching the 17 against Ole Miss. I guess my only question for Ole Miss really is, now you got Pete Golding in there. He's not the interim guy. He is the guy going forward. So that you would think theoretically that would be a positive. But, Will, like, do we really know, one, is it really a drop-off from Lane? And, two, if it is, how big of a drop-off is it? Because you got a real motivated coach on the other side that's going to Florida in Summerall. And I think that's a guy that people kind of and again, I'm not in the weeds on the X's and O's of Tulane football. I'm not going to say that. But he is respected in that regard. And I just don't know on a Pete Golding. So if you made me go on that, I'd probably take the 17 if you force me. I have not played it. I don't know that I'd want to lay it with Golding right away. Look, they could come out and blow the doors off Tulane, and then everybody's going to go, oh, my God, look at Ole Miss sticking it to Lane. And, you know, that's now the story of the postseason. Could be. But I think I'd go to the other side here and take the points in 17.5.
Yeah, and we've seen this game once. Like, why do we need to see it a second time? I mean, Ole Miss absolutely buried him the first time. This is a Tulane team that lost by 22 to Texas San Antonio. And this idea that they're one of the 12 best teams, it's just ridiculous. You got teams like Vandy and Texas and Notre Dame being left out. I don't know. It's not perfect, but they continue. No. Last year, the seeding was messed up. They kind of fixed that. I'm sure they'll start to tweak it and get better, but kind of a crazy season.
They're going to go at least 100%.
Probably next year, right?
Yeah, I would think by next year. I think the Notre Dame factor this year will push them at least to 16. And look, this is something I'm sure we've talked about in years past. You never had to leave four. For me, you never had to leave four. I was not in favor of the BCS back in the old days, real old days. And I said you had to go to four. They did. In that 10-year iteration post-BCS, you go back and look at the champions. Nobody doubts that we got the best team that won. That was in four. Now, you can make the case that Florida State backers want to make that the last year of the old system, they didn't get in. That's when their quarterback got hurt, and the committee said they're just not good enough. And they were right. I mean, if we're being honest, they were right. Yes. They still got that right, too.
Wasn't fair, but they were right.
Exactly. Well said. It was not fair, but they got it right. They were not going to win the national championship without Jordan Travis. Now that you've expanded it, and I've always said this, expansion doesn't make it better. It really doesn't. It's great for money. It's great for gambling. It's for us. It's for fun. It's for more games to watch. But if the desired result was to identify the best team, and they say they're trying to get the best 12 in, that's a joke, as you just pointed out. Well, you did that. Expansion was never necessary in that regard to identify the best team. And the regular season has been watered down. Conference championships are now a joke. And that's what they've done in a very short order. So when you expand it, not if, when you expand it to 16, Will, they got to figure out a way because they're really on the brink of losing something special. We already have, as I've said now, the answer to the trivia question will be, who's the first three-loss team that got into the playoffs? Alabama. It's not for the little guy. It's still for the big guy. When you go to 16, it makes sure that the Texases, the Notre Dames, and even the Vandys from a power conference would have gotten in. That would have been great this year. But in future years, I wonder if that becomes the Tulanes and that becomes now the JMUs. It once you expand to 16, because it's not going to stop, no matter how many times I tell them they don't need to.
Do you have any interest in any of these bowl games, man? I love having these games on. They're fun to watch. They're fun to bet. But unless you are betting them, boy, you got to be a real diehard. We're recording this before the Tuesday night Troy Jacksonville State, which I'm sure will be a classic. Old Dominion, South Florida, Louisiana, Delaware, Missouri, Arkansas State, Kennesaw State, Western Michigan. This is a rough, rough slate of bowls. Any interest in any of these, or is you going to kind of sit these out?
Sitting them out, brother. I mean, that is awful. That's what you've done to the bowl season here. And it's unwatchable. I mean, look, I get it that people are upset with the NFL over Saturday. Like, hey, they're taking the day. That was kind of there. They'd already done that. They kind of staked their territory years ago when they go to December and go to the December slate rather. And I'll be watching the NFL. Look, I'll be flip. If there's some drama to be had in one of those games on Saturday, that's great. But tell me this too: if you're college football and you're upset about the NFL, why not put two on Friday? Like, you've got the standalone. Bama and Oklahoma is going to be great. I can't wait. That feels like, I mean, they're going to get do a crazy number to begin the college football play. But why not play two games on Friday? There's no reason why you have to play the rest of them on Saturday. Play another one on Friday, a standalone spot. NCAA, man, you had a real good chance to get all the eyeballs on you for two games, not just one.
Yep, absolutely. All right, last one. The Mets. Are you of the belief, are you of the feeling here that I'm not going to judge the painting until the painting is done. This isn't what the team's going to look like. Let me judge the final product. Or is it column B where what the hell is going on or somewhere in between? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm looking now and going, like, when I see the money they gave to Polanco and I go, well, we just greatly overspent to get a guy we're going to put at first base where the last guy that was there at first base was hitting 40 bombs. I mean, man, that's tough. If that's it. Now you're right. If the painting isn't done yet and you're going to get more, wonderful. But the problem really is the starting pitching. It's the same problem and it's still there, right? So if they go out and get a school and make a move there for maybe put in a couple of the kids in the package that's not named Nolan McClain, then maybe I could understand it and get more excited about it. But, Will, I got to be honest with you, man. When you look at the landscape of the National League, and especially losing a guy like Sugar Diaz to the Dodgers, how in the world are they going to compete with what Philadelphia has done now, bringing back Schwarber next year? You know the Braves are going to bounce right back, right? Like, I'm already looking at that going, the Mets today, as we talk in December, to me on paper, are clearly the third best team. Clearly. Like, I can make no case that they can win this division right now, and they won't be priced that way. So if you give me a discount on a win total and maybe you get me in the mid-80s, I'll take a peek. But right now, I've got to be honest with you, this is a refrain for you and I for the last 3 years. I'm more excited about the Reds and what that young nucleus can do. I know they missed out on Schwarber. They were going hard for him. But they've got pitching, Will. They've got young pitching. As long as they don't move on from Hunter Green, which would be the dumbest thing I've heard whispered in Cincinnati circles, I'm actually more excited about the young guns on a team like Cincinnati than I am for my own team in New York.
Yeah, Green's got to pitch. I mean, that's the thing. Green, Lodolo, those guys are hurt a lot. But when those guys pitch, those guys are really good. Yeah, it's just been kind of a blah free agency. We have the two splashes with the Mets guys leaving. But other than that, you know, NBA free agency, it starts July 1st. It's basically over by July 2nd. You just go boom, 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 and everything happens. NFL free agency, you get that frenzy in March. Baseball free agency, it's just drip, drip, drip. It's not, you don't get that buzz for it because it's just so slow moving with all these free agents. Yankees have done nothing so far. I'm sure they'll do something, nothing probably major, which just, boy, we talk about Alabama and Indiana and college football, how much things have changed. The Yankees just being this, you know, small market mentality, that's really changed. But it's not great for baseball. This should be a time where they get a lot of buzz, even with football, where moves left and right, but it just doesn't happen.
Let me ask you this, because maybe I'm too close to the sun on this one, so I want your perspective. Like, if you looked at it really objectively and you said, all right, the Mets lose Sugar Diaz to the Dodgers, but they signed Devin Williams. Okay, the Mets move on from Brandon Nimmo, but they upgrade defensively in Marcus Semien. Okay, now they did not replace Pete, but you do get a Polanco who was great in the postseason last year. Am I too close to it that if I looked at almost filling the holes, even though maybe you downgraded a little bit in some areas, you know, the defense is better, and that was a problem. Yeah. And I guess the other theory is you did this with the guys and you did not make the playoffs. So Uncle Steve Cohen and, you know, David Stern said, we've got to make some real changes. If they upgrade defensively, if it's not a wash at closer, but not that bad of a downgrade, then maybe it's not as bad as I think it is.
And I don't know if it was Jeff Parles brought up the other day or somebody else where I heard it, where maybe the idea is to build around Soto and Lindor and young guys with the idea that a salary cap is coming and just get our ducks in a row and build around young talent. I don't know if that's the mentality, but I feel it feels like the salary cap is lurking over all this.
Well, the other rumor that I've been hearing from the insiders is that Lindor and Soto might not be so kumbaya in that clubhouse, which is a problem because you've jettisoned some other guys. Certainly, I know Nimmo, we'd heard rumors about that as well. Maybe the Wags are involved in some of this too. So that's something that as adults, and let's be honest, Lindor and Soto are adults now. They've been around the block. These are not young kids in that clubhouse. They got to figure out a way to coexist because you know this isn't the 70s with the Yankees where Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson can get at each other's throats and still win World Series. I think those days are over. I think you do need to be a little bit more symbiotic in that clubhouse. And if that's really an issue, that's something that the front office needs to address and get in squash right away, or else this could be a lingering thing for the Mets this year.
Yeah, it's interesting because Lindor, he smiles a lot. He's got a. Yeah. He seems like he's just kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. Soto doesn't say a lot. Even his year with the Yankees, you never really felt like you got to know him. He just didn't. I mean, the most memorable quote was after the World Series where he said, basically, I'll go for whoever gives me the most money, more or less. So I don't know. That is interesting. I don't know. Would you break him up because of that? I'm not sure.
Well, that's the rumor was that potentially that Lindor would – yep, that Lindor was on the block there with Sandy. And I don't know if there's any – how true those rumors are, but you know how that works. When you're kind of kicking the tires and it makes its way into media phrase, that normally means while you dispel the rumor publicly, privately you're probably making calls to see if there's ways that we can move on in lateral moves and get better cohesion in that clubhouse. But that's what it tells me when you move on from a Nimmo – I'm not accusing these guys of being bad teammates, and I wonder if they're going to move on from Jeff McNeil as well, that some of these guys didn't all fit. And so they're going to weed all those guys out. Why, it's shocking all the Met fans like myself, there could be a method to the madness there.
Dave, you're the best, man. I appreciate it. I wish you luck with your Mets.
Thanks for talking me off the ledge.
Of course. Where can we find you?
At D-Ross Sports on X, also on the gram, but I'm more on X, you know that. And again, check out the show. Will, it's always a better show when you're on it. VSiN by the Book, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern every weekday with Jensen Lewis.
And Nesson Plus, too. You can watch it. I don't know why it's not on the regular Nesson, but it's on Nesson Plus.
It's on the big boy Nesson.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dave, thanks, man.
Thanks, Will.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Friday. See you then.